From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Tuesday, April 5th, 2016. Boy, oh boy, if you're like me, I know many of you out there are still recovering from a doozy of a men's college basketball title game that was last night. Unbelievable. North Carolina, Villanova, going down to the final seconds, literally the final seconds of that game. Of course, we will recap the madness that was last night in just a second. You don't want to miss that. We will also be inviting not one but two guests on today's show. We will have the play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts, Jesse Goldberg Strassler, in the house to talk about opening day for the Luggies, also the crosstown showdown that would take place between the Lugnuts and the Michigan State baseball team tomorrow at Cooley Law School Stadium. You don't want to miss that. And we will also invite Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball columnist, reporter, and producer for CBS Radio 92.9 The Game out in the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. He was in Houston and got a chance to witness that one firsthand, folks. You don't want to miss that. And also on the back end of the show, we will talk about opening day for the Detroit Tigers. And it is Tuesday. That's right, Tickle Tuesday also comes your way. Weigh in on today's show by simply picking up that phone and dialing 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to facebook.com. Leave a comment there, and I will read it live here on the airwaves, or you can even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. So much to get to, so little time. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this, again, Tuesday, April 5th. All right, ladies and gents, boys and girls, Villanova is the new champion of the NCAA Men's College Hoop World. Last night in the championship game, it tipped off between the North Carolina Tar Heels and second seed Villanova. After an outstanding first half, the Tar Heels led by five. But coming out of the half, Villanova put on a show and fought back to make the game close. UNC's Marcus Page hit a one-footed off-balance, double-clutch shot to the national championship game to tie it at 74, I should say, with 4.7 seconds left. So with 4.7 seconds left, Villanova erases Marcus Page's heroism, I should say, when Chris Jennings hits the buzzer-beating three-pointer to propel Villanova to its first national championship. And get this, 31 years. We, of course, will have more on that game. And given the celebration on Villanova's campus last night when, again, Chris Jennings, you know, his shot went through the net at the buzzer, this should come as no surprise to anyone. But Villanova announced via a text alert that classes were canceled for the day. How lucky are those kids, right? The text read, quote, due to last night's historic win, Villanova University and Villanova Law are closed, and all day and evening classes are canceled today, April 5th, 2016. An NCAA championship and no classes, Villanova has to be the happiest place on planet Earth right now, all right? And tonight, it's the women's turn as the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament concludes with the national championship game that will air tonight at 8:30 p.m. on ESPN. The game will take place at Bankers Life Fieldhouse out in Indianapolis, Indiana, and will match up the number four seed Syracuse Orange and the top overall seed UConn Huskies, who are completely dominant. UConn has dominated their way to the finals, outscoring their opponents by, get this, 148 points. And speaking of women's college basketball, Ariel Powers has announced that she will forgo her last year of eligibility at Michigan State to enter the WNBA draft. Now, Powers turned 22 in January and will leave Michigan State with her degree in communication after she graduates this May. Now, Powers will likely be picked up in the top five. That's where she's slated right now in the WNBA draft, which will make her the highest Spartan picked in the WNBA draft. Now, the current highest is Kristen Haney, who was drafted number 9 overall in 2005. Now, unlike the NBA rookie contracts, get this, the average salary for a WNBA rookie is $36,500. We'll have more on that story as well. All right, Michigan State freshie D. Deontay Davis has until April 24th to declare for the NBA draft. Izzo will be meeting with him around next week whether Davis will play another year as a Spartan or declare for the NBA draft. Now, USA Today projects him going number 20 right now. ESPN has him even higher at number 12, potentially being drafted before senior Denzel Valentine, who is in the 14 to 17 projection range. Now, the decision is more about what Davis truly wants. He doesn't love school, but he is dying to get out. But this year's draft class appears weak compared to the projections of next year's draft class. We should know Davis's decision this month sometime. You better believe we're going to bring that to you. All right, former MSU tennis coach, sad news, folks. Stan Drobit passed away on Sunday in Fountain Inn, South Carolina at the age of 88. Drobit coached from 1959 to 1989 and was inducted into the Intercollegiate Tennis Hall of Fame in 1990. He will certainly be missed, and what a legacy he left at Michigan State. All right, the Detroit Tigers will begin the regular season tonight against the Miami Marlins in Miami. Justin Verlander will take the mound for the Tigers, while the Marlins will counter with lefty Wei Yi Chen in an interleague matchup in the National League Park. So you'll get to see Verlander at the plate. First pitch is set for 7:05 p.m. The Detroit Pistons are trying to keep their playoff spot in the East as they head to Miami to take on the Miami Heat. The Pistons are eyeing their first playoff appearance in 7 years as they are currently tied with the Indiana Pacers for the 7th and 8th spot. The magic number for Detroit is 3, and they will have 5 games remaining. Tonight in Miami, tomorrow in Orlando, back-to-back home games against the Washington Wizards and the Heat, and the final game away at Cleveland. Tip-off is set for 8 p.m. on TNT. And check this out. Twitter signs a new deal with the NFL to live stream Thursday Night Football. Now, beyond the live stream of the game, the partnership will also include pregame Periscope broadcasts from players and teams, as well as in-game highlights from Thursday Night Football. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's start the show.
Welcome to the big dance. This tournament is so much fun.
All you gotta do is give it your best.
First Twilight Face, play for each other. There's nothing like this special time right here.
The ball is tipped, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star in all the years. No one knows just how hard you work. But now it's sure. One shining moment, it's all on the line. In one shining moment, they're frozen in time. The time is short. And the road is long, in the blinking of an eye, that moment's gone. And when it's done, win or lose, you always did your best, 'cause inside you knew that in one shining moment, you reach deep inside. One shining moment. Feel the wind in your face. It's more than a contest. It's more than a race.
This is Oasis. He just backed out for the fifth round.
What an emotion of March Madness. It's just nothing like that.
Win or lose, you always hit your best.
gives it to Jenkins for the championship. Oh! Yes! Villanova, phenomenal! The national champions with Jenkins hitting the winner at the buzzer.
Ladies and gents, boys and girls, that is how you start a show. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And if you're like me again, folks, as I stated, I am still recovering from what we all got a chance to witness last night in Houston. Number 2 Villanova topping number 1 North Carolina by 3 points, 77 to 74, the final of that game. And you know, you hear that montage, and I love listening to One Shining Moment at the very end of every single men's college basketball season. It is such a rich tradition to kind of look at March and all of the incredible moments that took place, culminating with the national championship game. And Chris Jenkins, with that unbelievable buzzer-beating three-pointer, folks, that was the shining moment, arguably, in tournament title history. It was that big, folks. I mean, no one really saw that coming. I mean, it's just such a back-and-forth game. And in my opinion, I mean, I've been on this earth for 25 years. Not long, right? But every single year that I've been watching March Madness and the NCAA title game, I have never watched a title game that had this much intrigue and this much drama, culminating with a buzzer-beating game winner like that. I've never seen anything like it. What a play. What a moment. And how about Jay Wright? I don't know if you guys saw the reaction from the head coach of the Villanova Wildcats after Jenkins hit that shot. Everyone's going nuts, right? Everyone's going nuts. And there was one camera in particular that just stayed on Jay Wright throughout the entire moment. And Jay Wright was just so even keel. I mean, you would have thought it was just another moment, just an average moment, right? I mean, his face was even keel, and he said, hey. And he kind of just put his hands up like, hey, what do you expect? Hey, there we go. Game over. Let's go through the handshake line. Let's raise this banner. Unbelievable. It's one of those games that will forever be played over and over and over again right during the heels of March. Every single NCAA men's basketball tournament. It was so entertaining to watch that last night. And it was such a relief to watch a game like that, seeing as though the previous two Final Four games leading up to the championship game were, again, as we noted on yesterday's show, a complete snooze. All right? And I didn't even watch both games, you know, the entire way through because it just got out of hand at the end. But North Carolina and Villanova. Now, I must say this. I got to get this off my chest before we continue this discussion because I really thought that the referees weren't great in that game, and they almost took the championship out of Villanova's hands in the crunch time moments of that game. And there were bad calls on North Carolina's side and Villanova's side. So I don't want to say there was really an edge when it comes to that discussion. But the referees weren't great in that game. But despite that, you know, and even the shot, you know, prior to Jenkins to tie the game. How about Marcus Page? Double clutch three-pointer shooting from his hip off of one leg. Are you kidding me? And you know, it's so crazy because I watched the entire press conference. That's also why I have my coffee next to me. While also I'm dragging a bit here on today's show because I stayed up and watched the entire press conference. And, you know, I listened to, you know, both sides. And I found something in particularly interesting. A few things, actually. And Marcus Page talked about how after he hit that shot, again, you know, there was a brief stoppage in play, a timeout occurs, and Jay Wright is trying to rally his troops and set up a play, you know, with 4.7 seconds left on the clock. Roy Williams is trying to, you know, preach defense to his squad to put this thing into overtime. And Marcus Page had a very telling statement to his team. He said, you know what, guys, if this thing goes to overtime, we are winning this game. There is no way we are going to lose this game. 4.7 seconds left. And then, you know, and then on the contrary, I listened to what Jay Wright and his respective personnel had to say when describing that particular play. It's a play that Villanova has worked on all year. It's a design play, and Jay Wright even said they even have a name for it. He didn't. I was curious as to why the reporter didn't follow up and say, okay, what's the name of the play? But he didn't. But they do have a name for the play, and it's a design play. And on that play, Jenkins is actually the last option on the play. Phil Booth, according to Jay Wright, was the first option on that play. And if you really look at it, the entire left side of the court is completely empty. Apparently, a screen was supposed to be set for Phil Booth. There was no way that Ryan Arkadiakono, I love that name, Arkadiakono, I could say that left and right, but there was no way that Ryan Arkadiakono was going to get the ball over to Phil Booth. And Chris Jenkins was actually the last option, was supposed to be the last option on the play. And if you look at the play again, Chris Jenkins is the guy who inbounds the basketball. This is basketball 101. It's why I always say around this time of the year, it comes down to the little things. If you're going to win a championship, you have to do the little things right. And they constantly preach to you from little league ball all the way up, folks, that you cannot let the man who inbounds the basketball out of your sight. That's exactly what happened. UNC didn't pay much attention to Jenkins. He acted as the trailer on the play. Arkadiakono, he does a great job of finding him. And also, Ryan also did a good job of kind of setting a screen for him, an impromptu screen. You know, just kind of just shared the ball to him. He was in the way of a North Carolina defender. The defender gets there late, gives Jenkins a great look at the basketball, and boom, game over. Unbelievable. Just an unbelievable moment. I want to get your thoughts on it. It's one of those moments that will go down in college basketball lore. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Right now, I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, my man Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing?
Wow. I mean, that's how I have to start off with. Wow. I still can't believe that game. There was just such a rush of emotions after that. I was a little bit torn. One of my dad's friends, I was rooting for him because he's a UNC professor, but a Villanova graduate.
Oh, wow.
So what a sticky situation to be in right there, having to root for both teams, I guess, to somehow come to a magical draw. But anyway, that was one of the best final championship performances I've ever seen from a few players. One was Ryan Arkadiakono, because it takes so much chemistry, so much unselfishness and generosity to be able to pass up that final shot. Usually on those last second plays, you get the ball into your the hands of your star player and you let him do what he does. And that's what happened. They gave it to Ryan Arkadiakono. They let him make the final decision and he chose to pass it off. He had a decent look himself, but he would have been very off balance.
It would have been tough,
wouldn't
though.
Wouldn't have been a good look, yeah.
Because there were two white jerseys in front
exactly.
of him. Though. Now, I thought he had the option to maybe drive on the play as well.
I thought so, too.
Maybe drive and look for a foul there. But again, with the way – and well, on the contrary, with the way the refs were calling that game, if he would have created some contact, he might have went to the line and shot two free throws to possibly win that game. But – man, but it takes a lot. He's so unselfish, and that's what Jay Wright raves about when talking about Arkadiakono.
And a four-year player. And that's another thing with Villanova. This team had two freshmen that played last night. And while that seems like a decent amount, in today's game of college basketball, that's nothing. Arkadiakono and Ochefu, both are seniors. Then you've got Josh Hart, Chris Jenkins, both are juniors. So this team basically consisted, and the core of this team was all upperclassmen. That's really cool. Such an unselfish play, and you can't say enough about a guy on the other side of the court to Marcus Page. Not only that three, but the play before that when he had a wide-open layup, missed it, and got the rebound in a swarm of seven-foot Villanova players.
Gritty.
And went back up amidst all of that pressure and made the shot. It was just a great effort from both sides, and well, we won't live this down for 50 years.
No,
we won't.
Everyone's going to be talking about this game for years and decades to come, okay? And it was also fun to watch Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player of all time, in the stand sitting next to Ahmad Rashad, and he was just going through it, man.
Well, did you see some of those memes,
too? Of course. I mean, the crying Jordan meme has become so popular, and it's used for every depressing moment in the game of life now. Everyone uses that thing. And I just knew that if North Carolina lost that game, it was going to be ramped up times 20. And that's exactly what happened last night. I also want to note this. I was also doing some research late last night. And, you know, this is a Villanova team that And this is also a telling stat here. Out of the past 20 years, 20 years, folks, 12 national championship belongs to the big dogs. I call them the big dogs of the college basketball world. 12 of those have been won by either North Carolina, UConn, Duke, or Kentucky. Again, Villanova hasn't won one in 31 years since the 80s. They were breaking a trend here, Isaac, that directly speaks to a word that we've constantly brought up throughout this entire men's college basketball season: parity. If there was anything that reigns truer when discussing that word, it's Villanova topping a North Carolina team that has been a part of college basketball dominance in the last 20 years. And also doing it with a starting lineup. Again, Ryan Arkadiakono, Phil Booth, Josh Hart, Daniel Ochefu, and also Chris Jenkins. None of those players, Isaac, are slated to go in the first round of the upcoming NBA draft. And if that does not happen, that starting lineup, again, that won the national championship, this could be the first team to win a national championship without any first-round draft picks in that same year in the starting lineup since Indiana back in 1987. How crazy is that? Mind-blowing, right?
Ridiculous. And Phil Booth, too. He had a season high last year with 20 points, actually a career high in college. Josh Hart, you mentioned him. If nobody takes him in the first round, they're idiots. Because Josh Hart, if you ask me, could be a future All-Star. Has good size, two-way player, and is coming off a career game against Oklahoma where he was just the force that shut down Buddy Hield while putting up 23 points. Mm-hmm. So you've got those two guys to consider. But the other thing about this Villanova team is, you and I said, they're not going to shoot 71% again. They shot 58% on this tournament. That's unmatched by anybody.
Hats off to them. Congratulations to Jay Wright and the Villanova Wildcats. Jay Wright's very first national championship. All right, also in studio, we have a dear friend of the show. His name is Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. He is the voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. He is here to talk about another year. But first, Jesse, you are a sports aficionado. I got to get your thoughts on last night's insane in the membrane finish between the Tar Heels and the Wildcats.
That was a championship game. Those were the two best teams in the country. Came all the way down to the buzzer. How many buzzer beaters can you think of to decide championships? There was Lorenzo Charles for North Carolina State. And that's about all that comes to my mind for the NCAA final.
Exactly. It hasn't happened that way since, I believe, like 1983?
83.
1983 is the last time we saw a title game decided by a buzzer beater. And what year was that? Do you know what game that was?
That was North Carolina
State.
That game you were
referring to, Jesse. Unbelievable, though, right?
And when you also think about maybe these players, none of them gets drafted in the first round, and Ben Simmons gets taken number one overall, and his team didn't even make the tournament, well, which would you prefer? Do you want those future pros, or do you want your college team to win? There's your recipe from Villanova.
That's so true. And it just kind of just directly speaks to how the NBA, they really are talent. You know, when they look at, okay, which players do we want to come out and to really impact our team? They're looking at immediate impact through the glass, through the eye lens of talent. But at the same time, when you win a national championship, and then it's a double-edged sword, Jess, because, okay, you could bring up UConn, for instance. Remember when UConn went all the way, and who was the little guy?
Shabazz Napier,
who had the incredible tourney. Shabazz Napier, I haven't heard his name brought up at all, really.
Remember LeBron wanted Miami to draft him, and then LeBron went to Cleveland.
Well, exactly. Shabazz isn't doing much in Miami to help him either.
He's not doing much. So, again, it's one of those things you look at and say, all right, you won a national championship, but, again, the NBA is such a bigger level.
It's potential-driven, too.
This concept
of potential, which is totally contrived just about. Nobody knows what exactly that means.
Exactly.
Well, look at what you talked about right from the top, that Deontay Davis could be drafted before Denzel Valentine should Deontay come out. And we know that he's going to be a heck of a player down the road, but what Denzel just accomplished as one of the top two players in men's college basketball, and I'd argue the best, but, right, and you would take Deontay ahead of him if you're an NBA team right now.
Very true. Very, very good point, Jesse. And before we talk about the Luggies here, what will you take away from this college basketball postseason? What were some of your favorite moments?
The fact that the two best teams played for the national title and that one of them won in the fashion that it did, I think back to the way that it ended. But Buddy Hield was tremendous. And there were some other things that went on down over the course of the season that I loved. I loved the fact that it was so wide open coming in. And I would compare it to Major League Baseball. If you look at the Major League Baseball landscape that we've got, the Cubs are great, the Astros are great, the Blue Jays are great, the Rays could be something else, the Royals are something, the Mets, the Dodgers, and you can keep on going right on down. Love the Pirates. That was this NCAA season. So many great teams, so many teams ranked highly and then getting knocked off. I enjoy a ton of quality at the top. Not a ton of, this team might be okay, but we're not sure. No. These were great teams spread throughout the country. The tournament decided the champion, but I enjoy a lot of different fans throughout the country saying, we think that our team is good and could win the whole thing.
Totally agree. It was a fun college basketball year, and I cannot believe that it has now come to an end. So what do we nationally do, Jesse? We shift our attention to America's pastime. That's right, baseball. The Lansing Lugnuts will host the Michigan State Spartans at Cooley Law School Stadium tomorrow at 7:05 p.m. in the 10th annual Crosstown Showdown presented by Auto Owners Insurance, and then officially raise the curtain on their 21st season in Mid-Michigan at 7:05 p.m. on Thursday against the Great Lakes Loons. So, Jesse, kind of give us a synopsis of what the Luggies look like this year.
We can pitch. So Noah Syndergaard is right now with the New York Mets, and he was just a Lansing Lugnut in 2012. And he's one of the top young pitchers in baseball, World Series star last year. Mm-hmm. Let me give you the next guy. Sean Reed Foley. Sean Reed Foley is 20 years of age, pitched for us last year at age 19, struck out 90 guys in 60 innings. He's better this year. His pitching coach told me light bulb turned on, and he was lights out. So my suggestion is come out to Cooley Law School Stadium and see him before he gets promoted, because he is going to the big leagues down the road. He is about 6'3 and a monster.
Wow, looking forward to checking him out. And as far as, you know, this is a in particular interesting year because you guys have a new manager this year, John Schneider. I'm pretty sure doing your homework and preparing for another year, you've got a chance to sit down with John. What type of personality is he?
Great. Charismatic. Outgoing, ready to help you at all costs, and also a great player's manager. He brings enthusiasm, he brings respect, and there's just something about him that he keeps the game fun. Last 2 years, he was managing in Vancouver, and a couple of years before that, he was in Vancouver too. Brings 198 career managerial wins to us. He was a catcher who made his way up through the system, played up till AAA before turning to coaching, and every single player who's ever played for him loves him.
Looking forward to getting to know John and sitting down with him, and we hope to have him on our airwaves very, very soon. And Jesse, looking at last year, the Lugnuts lost to the West Michigan Whitecaps, ending a bid for their third Midwest League championship in franchise history. They got to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They were the Eastern Division first half champs and made the postseason for the first time since 2012. What was it about last year that enabled this team to have so much success? And how much do you guys have coming back from last year's team, if any?
We have 11 players back. Some of those guys are really intriguing, and I'll give you a couple. Lane Thomas is a combination center fielder / second baseman. He is also very young. He's 20. He's going to be good. When we had him last year, he told me he was hurt the entirety of last year, wrist injury. Now he's 100% healthy, and he can hit. But the reason why we made it all that way, and the reason why we won that first half division title, was because the team was loaded. Speaking to some major league scouts, they said that we might be the most talented single-A team they've ever seen. Jesus Tinoco was traded to the Rockies. He's an opening day starter in high A. Chase DeYoung was traded to the Dodgers. He's the Dodgers' double-A opening day starter. Meanwhile, Connor Green established himself breakout prospect. Suddenly, he's the Blue Jays' top pitching prospect. And Sean Reed Foley was right there helping out. Shane Dawson was leading us in victories. He jumped all the way up to double-A. Those are our pitchers. The pitchers were, I would argue, the worst part of the team. Mm-hmm. Because the hitters featured Anthony Alford, Rowdy Tellez, the league MVP in Ryan McBroom, and a shortstop in Richard Urania, all of whom I think have major league futures. You get that kind of collection of talent together, we were dominant. If they had played the league championship in June, there is no question in my mind that the Lugnuts would have won the whole thing.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to this year. And again, the Crosstown Showdown taking place tomorrow night. I will be there after I finish up, of course, Current Sports TV. And I believe this is the 10th annual one. The Lugnuts lead the series, I believe, 7-2, if I'm not mistaken. What's on the line other than bragging rights here, Jesse?
I don't think there's anything on the line. Because here's the way I look at it. If you come, you're come celebrating baseball. Wear your green and white or wear your red and black. We are actually delivering a giveaway this year to the first 2,000 fans. Lugnuts baseball caps in Spartan green. And the symbolism there is we're together. This is baseball in Michigan. The Lugnuts, the Spartans. You can be a Lugnut and a Spartan fan. It connects Lansing and East Lansing. And so Michigan State will get a ton of players into the game. Basically, give them that opportunity to play at our field in front of all these fans. And meanwhile, the Blue Jays fly in some of their top prospects who are not yet ready for us. We've got a kid named Hansel Rodriguez, who's 19, who I was told is going to be in the Major League someday. He's not ready to pitch for the Lugnuts yet. And the Blue Jays have flown him in just for this game, just so he can have that experience of pitching against Michigan State.
Absolutely looking forward to that one, Jesse. And also, I got to know, what are some cool new additives that you guys will have throughout this year at Cooley Law School Stadium for the fans to enjoy?
Well, when you first walk in, you're going to see the outfield development. We now have the apartment complex beyond the center field wall with 84 different units.
People are actually living in there
now. Yes, and half of them are spoken for, so you can step out onto your balcony, barbecue, watch fireworks. On the first floor, we've got our great reception hall, The View, and also a Good Hops, our craft beer, and great hamburgers there. But over the course of the season, we're three different days stand out beyond our LAFCU fireworks. First Wednesdays, winning Wednesdays, we're calling them. Keep your ticket stub every time you come to a Wednesday game. If the Lugnuts win, that ticket is good enough for a game later on in the year. When the Lugnuts win, you get a free ticket, basically, to an ensuing Lugnuts game with your Wednesday ticket.
So cool. Love that one.
And we'll be giving away prizes throughout the game. Thursday nights, we're calling it Labatt Thirsty Thursday Gone Wild. It starts off with a monkey rodeo for opening night, and that gives you a hint of what's going on. There's going to be a WrestleMania. There will be stand-up comedy night, and we'll have a comedian in. We'll have salute to tattoos night and much more. That's Thursdays and half off our craft beers on Thursdays, and then Sundays for the families. And once again, we'll go above and beyond and call special days. So when Captain America Civil War comes out, we'll have a Captain America Kids Day. New Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies coming out. Yes, we'll celebrate the heroes in the half shell. We'll celebrate Big Lug's birthday. But Sundays I love too, because if you come early, come at 1 o'clock for our 2 o'clock game, families play catch right on the field. And then after the game, kids get to run around the bases. I just enjoy that. It's whatever happens with the baseball game, come with your family, come with your friends. Best weather of the entire year once everything starts to warm up. And we break it on down. If a Tigers game, and I grew up a huge Tigers game, a Tigers fan, but you still feel separated. It's still a ways away.
Right.
And with the Lugnuts, we like to break down those barriers.
God, I love that. It's going to be a fun year. Again, Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts. And I believe, Jesse, you have a new partner in the booth, right?
Kevin Gill. Yes, I do.
My former co-worker at WLNS-TV6, he told me the news not too long ago that he will be alongside you calling the games. How cool is that? How is that chemistry developing between you two?
I told him that I would be stopping by to say hi to you, and he immediately launched into his Al Martin impression.
Stop it.
Oh, we are psyched. Goodness. And I tell you what, because Kevin is now with me, we'll be doing post-game interviews. I think he wants to start periscoping from the booth. He's got ideas.
Nice.
We're going to have a blast.
Oh, that's going to be so fun. All right, how can people find out more information about the Lugnuts, Jesse?
Go online to LansingLugnuts.com. Our phone number is 517-485-4500. And we're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Just search Lansing Lugnuts.
Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, the one, the only play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts. Jesse, I'm looking forward to the season.
Al, thank you very much. I look forward to seeing you there because, hey, we'll be playing virtually every day, spring and summer long.
That's right. If you got nothing to do, check out the Luggies, all right? Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll invite Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball columnist, reporter, producer for CBS Radio down in the ATL. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
Uh-huh, honey.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Was Jesse great or what? I'm looking forward to this year, Isaac. I mean, monkeys riding dogs? I mean, come on, man. That's too good.
That's the best attraction I've ever heard of from a minor league stadium promotion squad. Seriously, monkeys riding dogs and the chance for one fan to meet the monkeys. That is, for me, just the paramount of life right there. If I can one day meet a monkey, I feel like I've done my job on this world.
You know what? If I've always wanted a monkey growing up, man.
Me too.
Ever since I saw what Michael Jackson, remember when Mike had a monkey?
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? I forget the monkey's name. What was the name of that monkey?
Let me look that up. I'll look that up.
I forget the name of the monkey, but I'm like, man, they're so intelligent. They're highly intelligent. So I'm looking forward to possibly doing a feature for Current Sports TV on just that event alone. All right,
folks. I call dibs on covering that.
Definitely. I also want to throw this out there because I know we've been getting a few calls about today's show, and I forgot to mention this at the very top of the hour. We are streaming only, ladies and gents. We are streaming only. We are having construction on one of our antennas here at WKAR AM 870. We'll be back at it tomorrow, but again, we are only online and also during our live stream on Facebook right now. So, but hey, for those listening, still call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, it is opening day for the Detroit Tigers as well as they open up the season against the Miami Marlins on the road. Going to be a fun year. You know, I'm looking forward to checking out, you know, and seeing the impact that Jordan Zimmermann has on this squad. He is ideally going to be that second guy right in back of Justin Verlander. So we'll give you guys a preview of the Detroit Tigers year in just a second. But in the meantime, we will invite him for the final time for the year of men's college hoops, DeShaun Tate, who has been with us day in and day out, week in and week out, to talk about March Madness. He is DeShaun Tate, men's college basketball columnist, reporter, producer for CBS Radio 92.9 The Game out in Atlanta, Georgia. DeShaun, how you doing, my friend?
I'm sad, Al. I'm sad now, man. I've been talking about how crazy it's been in college basketball season, tired and worn out I am, and how I couldn't kind of wait for the season to be over considering how long of a season it's been. Now that there's no more college basketball until early November, I don't know what to do with myself over the summer.
Exactly. DeShaun, that's what I want to ask you, because you know, college hoops is what you do. What do you do now? Do you just go take a vacation to Mexico or something like that?
Yeah, I was going to say, this might have to be one of those years where it's going to be time to kind of hit the Bahamas, man, kind of let the feet out a little bit, come out in the gym shorts and a wife beater, man, sip on something real fruity, you know, getting fanned down, straight sweat on the stem or something, man. So I don't think that any of the beaches out in South Carolina or anything going towards Florida is going to do any justice for me. It's going to be time for the Bahamas.
Gotcha. Well, you certainly enjoy that, my friend. You do outstanding work, and you deserve a break, all right? But in
Thank
the meantime, you.
You
got one more assignment, all right? You got to join us here on the show and recap the madness that took place last night between Villanova and North Carolina. DeShaun, first, where do you rank that title game in men's college hoop history?
I think it's easily considered to be a top 10 for sure, maybe top 5, just depending. You know, one of the better things about the game last night is that it was so tight. You know, we saw a lot of lead changes and kind of going back and forth, which is something we weren't sure we were going to receive that going into the game on yesterday, simply because everyone's thinking, you know, North Carolina being one of those teams that are probably going to run away with this thing towards the end. Maybe Villanova can only keep it so close within so many points throughout the duration of the game, but that Carolina will pull away down the stretch. But Villanova prevailed. I think it's one of the top ones, especially considering it came down to a buzzer beater. And I like to think we hadn't seen that in a while, but thinking back at it, we've seen it in 2008 with Memphis against Kansas winning at the buzzer, and a very, very close game that came down to it in 2010, actually, between Butler and Duke. So I like to think that it's right up there with a lot of those. Some of the better national championship games were probably prior to, you know, the 2000s, more into the 80s and 90s. But at the end of the day, I definitely think it was a top 10 for sure.
I got to be honest with you, Sean. I got to put it at number one on my list. I have never seen a college basketball title game with that much back and forth between both teams and they ended. Again, this is the first time that we've seen a title game decided on a buzzer beater with no time left on the clock since 1983. That hasn't happened since before I was born, all right? And I just thought it had so much intrigue, and the back and forth, the Marcus Paige shot, which I think is being trumped a little bit by, of course, the range of Chris Jenkins in the three-pointer that he hit to win the game. But how crazy was that? One leg, shooting from the hip, ties the game. Unbelievable stuff. And I want to talk about that play, the game-winning play. Can you sort of break down what allowed Chris Jenkins to get just enough space to launch that three-pointer to eventually win the game for the Wildcats?
Well, I ultimately thought what most people probably thought, even though 3 seconds was still a lot of time for Villanova to get something. But I thought with Marcus Paige being freed up a little bit after Daniel Chefu kind of took a risk to steal the ball, and then you see a double-pump three-pointer by Marcus Paige, I thought that was pretty much Villanova's game to lose before that happened. And of course I'm thinking, okay, we're going into overtime. I don't think, you know, there's anything that Villanova really can do to kind of win that game, but it all just kind of goes to show that you never want to count someone out, you know, and that's one of the last things that you really wanted to do. And I'm really, really happy for Coach Jay Wright getting this national championship, because even though I like to pull for North Carolina from time to time, always a favorite, one of the favorite teams of mine growing up as a kid. But at the end of the day, you got to consider all things. I like to see a coach win his very first national championship. That always kind of put the cherry on top of everything for me. But, you know, when you're looking at it down the stretch, I like to think that Roy Williams kind of got out-coached a little bit. You see Ryan Arcidiacono kind of come down. You thought he would be the guy to take that game-winning shot, as he's, you know, carried that team the whole way pretty much the entire postseason. And then, of course, Chris Jenkins, you see him for a three-pointer. If you want somebody to take it, Chris Jenkins is probably the guy you want taking it. Of course, North Carolina came away with the L, unfortunately. But I don't understand why a guy like the big guy that they, Kennedy Meeks, was out there towards the three-point line, but you got all your longest wings, guys like Justin Jackson and Bryce Johnson, underneath the rim and not contesting for a shot. And they're your guys, you know, that can probably contest for a three-pointer the best. So I didn't really understand that. That's where I think that Roy Williams got out-coached.
Yeah, I didn't understand that as well, Deshaun. And, again, you know, I think that play directly speaks to the impact that Ryan Arcidiacono has had on this team. Again, as you stated, throughout this entire month of March, he has carried this squad, and it showed his unselfishness on that play to find Chris for the three. And listening to Jay Wright, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, you know, and listening to his comments about that play, it was a design play. It's a play they've worked on multiple times. They have a name for it, and Chris was actually the last option on that play. North Carolina fell asleep. Chris was the trailer on the play. He's the guy who inbounded the ball, actually. They fell asleep, gave him too much room, and kaput. Game over.
That's the crazy part about it, because when you're looking at it, it's like, you know, they've drawn it up so many times. They even said, you know, during some post-game press conference stuff, that, hey, that play just typically has not really worked for us very often. And you got to give credit to what Villanova has been able to do over the course of the entire postseason. You know, including obviously Ryan Arcidiacono, but in the same token, they haven't shot less than 50% throughout the entire course of the postseason. So when you're looking at considering all those things, I know that Villanova gets a lot of credit for their offense and their run and gun, and they shoot lots of three-pointers, and that's what they'll live and die by, and they always have. They usually roll 4 guards out there in the starting lineup, 1 big. But, you know, when you're looking at it, we saw a guy like Phil Booth come off the bench. He was the difference maker. He scores 20 points off the bench, where I don't think anyone from Carolina off the bench scored more than 4 points. So when you're looking at it all the way around, the entire landscape of college basketball ended up making for an outstanding game. And I like the way that it turned out. Only better things to see down the road for the month of March. I just like what Villanova was able to do from an outstanding shooting standpoint throughout the entire course of the tournament.
Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball columnist, reporter, and producer for CBS Radio. Now, Deshaun, I also mentioned how, again, this could become the first team to win a national championship without any first-round picks in its starting lineup. If it happens that way, it will be the first time that has happened since Indiana Back in 1987, Ryan Arcidiacono, Phil Booth, Josh Hart, Daniel Ochefu, and Chris Jenkins. How does Villanova's win directly speak to the competitiveness of this college basketball year from the top all the way to the bottom?
I think that it's definitely got to speak a lot of volume. And if it doesn't do anything else, everybody knows that, you know, this is the year for the seniors. And we've talked so much about freshmen leading all the way up to this point for probably at least the last maybe 10 years or so, ever since John Calipari kind of implemented that into the college game. But, you know, when you're looking at everything, considering that, it's done nothing more than probably teach younger guys a very, very valuable lesson. And that is, forget about, you know, risking, you know, injuries by coming back for a junior season, let alone a sophomore season. You've got guys like, you know, Ryan Arcidiacono and Buddy Hield and Denzel Valentine. There's so many others, Bryce Johnson, guys that are going to the league, that are going to play at the next level, but they stayed in order to kind of improve upon their draft stock. And I think that is probably one of the more valuable lessons learned here. But I think that it does a lot of credit. It definitely does a whole lot of justice, because it goes to show with guys sticking around a little bit longer, it's able to create a little bit more chemistry. And maybe we haven't seen that in such a long time without guys going the first round. We almost seen it in a similar Villanova team back in maybe, I want to say, was that 2009, where Scotty Reynolds was on that team. They did end up going to, I think that was Scotty Reynolds that was on that team, but he ended up being a first-team All-American nationally, but didn't end up getting picked in the first round. And this kind of reminds me a lot of that team, but I think that it just kind of goes to show everybody that's kind of sitting back watching, you don't necessarily need a star on a team in order to win a national championship. Kind of reminds me of those Pistons in the playoffs when they won the whole thing back in, what was that, 2004, I believe?
Yep,
you know, they didn't necessarily have an all-star on that team, but they did have superstars. They didn't necessarily have an all-star. Kind of goes to show, if you play, you know, sound defense, you have the offense to match, you have good role players or outstanding coach, you put it all together for the postseason, you could potentially be cutting down some nets.
Deshaun, of course, there was a lot of controversy around this North Carolina basketball team and, frankly, the university itself, due to the academic violations that have been investigated by the NCAA. Do you think a punishment is going to be handed down that will affect the basketball program going into next season?
I'm not sure, and I don't really think so. I mean, at the end of the day, I really believe that if it was going to happen, then there would have been a punishment that was come down upon North Carolina, or they would have taken a self-imposed punishment, something similar to what Louisville did. One of my biggest questions at this point is, what will Roy Williams do? You know, is it time to kind of hang it up? You know, at some point, I like to think that, you know, once you get to a certain age, and I don't think he really has very many questions in the air as to whether he'll win another national championship if he stays at North Carolina, because of the prestige of the program and what they're able to bring in recruiting-wise nationally. But, you know, I still see it almost as if we talked a little bit about, you know, the elephant in the room. We talked about the free space on the bingo card the other day and how North Carolina could not afford to drop the ball on this one, and that's exactly what they did. They were number one coming in on the season, preseason ranked. You know, they got this far, but if you know a little bit about North Carolina, they don't hang up just Final Four banners. If they're not national championship banners, I don't see them hanging them. The disappointment here was that we saw them play Duke weeks ago at Chapel Hill on Michael Jordan's birthday, and they took an L to a team that's an in-state rival, the biggest rivalry in college basketball. How disappointing was that on Michael Jordan's birthday? All of that just to get to this point, the national championship game with Michael Jordan sitting there right in the crowd to see it for himself, and they drop the ball. I think that's got to be something that's very, very disturbing for the fans there at North Carolina and Chapel Hill.
Yeah, and concerning, again, the NCAA's investigation into the long-running academic fraud case that involves students and athletes over an 18-year period at the school, Roy Williams has actually come out and issued a statement. He was asked during an ESPN interview on Sunday at the NCAA tournament's Final Four about the chances that NC gets hit by NCAA sanctions. Williams said that he would be speculating, but said, quote, "I don't think we're going to get hit in any way at all. Hard to penalize somebody when you have no allegations against him, end quote. So Roy is kind of backing up your notion there. He doesn't expect to be hit, but hey, who knows? The NCAA, when it comes to NCAA, expect the unexpected. That's what I always say.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know what, too? This wasn't just a matter, and I just want to educate a couple people. This wasn't just a matter within the program as far as basketball athletics.
Right.
This was supposed to be conceived to be an issue within not only the football department and the athletics in general, but in addition to that, something that kind of happened going all the way back to when they had Bill Guthridge and weren't, you know, really implementing that guys would go ahead and kind of take themselves away from some of those core classes that a lot of them were, you know, conceived of taking. And this was more of a student body matter, too. This wasn't just the athletics department. So I want people to also understand this wasn't just the basketball program. It was also the football program, amongst others athletically, and the student body in general. So we'll just kind of go to see how, you know, this thing will shape out. But Roy Williams definitely has a case there. We're just saying it's not just our athletics program, and it's not just when I became here as a coach. This was happening prior.
All right, Deshaun, before you hop on that plane to the Bahamas, my friend, I got to ask, what are your takeaways for this men's college basketball postseason? What did we learn when evaluating the tournament?
Parity. Parity is that big word. It's all about guys that are being able to stay. If we haven't learned anything, and I know I said this a little bit earlier, if we haven't learned anything else, it's about guys being able to stay, you know, with those respective programs, not leaving and making an early jump to the league. We've seen, you know, a lot of this whole Final Four. It wasn't built around freshmen this year. Oklahoma with their, you know, upperclassmen. The same thing with Villanova, the same thing with North Carolina, and even Syracuse. And we all seen them shine on the big, on the highest levels of the game in the sport of college basketball. If guys stay home, they're going to make for a much better college basketball season year in and year out, as long as those things can happen.
Deshaun Tate, men's college basketball columnist, reporter, and producer for CBS Radio 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, Georgia. Deshaun, thank you so much for joining us this season. You have been outstanding, my friend.
Thank you for having me, man. Looking forward to it next year.
You got it. Deshaun Tate, gotta love him. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's current sports by giving you a brief preview of the Detroit Tigers as they open the season tonight. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, I want to pass this news along to you all if you have been living under a rock and didn't see this story, but Ariel Powers, now former Michigan State women's basketball player, she has announced that she will forgo her last year of eligibility at MSU to enter the WNBA draft. Now, Powers turned 22 in January and will leave MSU with her degree in communication after she graduates this May. Now, Powers will likely be picked as being slated possibly in the top five. That could make her the highest Spartan ever picked that high in the WNBA draft. I will say, Isaac, this news came as a bit of a shock to me because it's not often that you see, one for one, a Spartan heading to the WNBA, let alone doing it early. Again, you know, I mentioned how the average salary for a WNBA rookie is a little over $36,000 a year. Very shocking. I really thought Powers was going to return and pad those numbers a bit and then make that jump.
Yeah, you know, it's not a situation where you're necessarily missing out on grand amounts of money if you get injured. As it is, that's just where the pay gap stands right now for women's.
So with that being said, the question
basketball is
like, yeah, with that being said, the question is like, why then? You know what I mean?
Yeah, a free year of school in some ways is worth more than that. So at the same time, though, she must have felt that this is a move where she's at her peak in terms of draft status because she's still an underclassman,
right, but
already accomplished so much in her college career. She must have felt that maybe MSU didn't necessarily stand a better chance in the tournament or of really going far down the road next year. And she's already accumulated all the personal accolades that you can. MSU's leading all-time scorer and averaged 21.8 points per game last year, 9.2 rebounds. You can't necessarily fault her for the decision, but like you, it did surprise me.
Yeah, that's where I was going as well. I think she does feel like she has reached her peak. She feels like she has accomplished everything that she has set out to accomplish as a Michigan State women's basketball player. And again, I also think that when you evaluate respective players' careers in college, you don't want to risk injury. You know what I mean? Who knows what could happen next year with Ariel Powers? Why not, you know, strike the iron while it's hot right now and get out there and start making some money and accomplish her dream? She's always wanted to play in the WNBA. That's always been the goal. So if that's your dream and you can make that dream happen right now, why not do it? So
yeah,
no matter the pay. Right.
I mean, a vocation of playing basketball for money, that's a pretty good gig.
Certainly. All right, the Tigers open their season tonight. How about that? I'll be flipping between my Pistons, taking on the Miami Heat as they continue to fight for their playoff lives, as well as opening day for the Detroit Tigers. Justin Verlander will take the mound for the Tigers, while the Marlins will counter with lefty Wei Yin Chin. Love that. Wei Yin Chin.
Oh, yeah.
He's good.
You were smiling behind the glass just saying it. It makes you happy.
Oh, I love Wei Yin Chin and Arkadiakono. Those have been the names of the day on today's show. I love saying those two names. But, yeah, at 7:05 p.m. is that game. I'm interested to see the Tigers this year. I'm excited to see the Tigers this year, Isaac. I love Jordan Zimmerman. The key additions for this team, Jordan Zimmerman, you talk about Justin Upton, Francisco Rodriguez is another name you can bring up, Cameron Maben, Mike Pelfrey. I think all of those guys are going to make an impact. But the big question mark every single year, and I bring this up with the Tigers, is the bullpen. How good will the Tigers' bullpen be? You have to have a good bullpen if you are going to compete for a World Series. Simple as that. Last year, the Tigers finished 27th in the MLB with an ERA of 4.38. That's how their bullpen looked last year. That was last in the AL Central and second worst in the AL. Only the Oakland A's were worse, Isaac. That can't happen this year.
Well, in my opinion on the take of the Tigers for their strategy is, I think, I was thinking of this analogy earlier, actually, but the Tigers have really stocked up on starters, if you ask me.
They have.
With Pelfrey, Zimmerman, Green's coming back, of course, Verlander.
They've always had great starting pitching.
Exactly. And that's not the problem. But I think they're going to try to rotate quite a few of those guys into the bullpen. And it's the equivalent of having a good 2-mile runner move to the 800-meter dash or the 400-meter dash. So that's right. The strategy for the Tigers. I like it, actually. It's an experiment. I'm interested to see how it works out.
Yeah, and you got two key returners, Alex Wilson and Blaine Hardy. And I do believe that adding Francisco Rodriguez, though, does strengthen that bullpen. He could be that
K-Rod.
Guy. Yeah, exactly. He could be that guy to really bridge the starter to the closer. So we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to checking out the Tigers tonight. Thanks so much to Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts, as well as Deshaun Tate of CBS Radio down in Atlanta, Georgia. And thank you all out there for tuning in to another fantastic edition of WKER's Current Sports. Again, folks, take care. Have a great afternoon, and be easy, people.